Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
That's the thing about the story of George Santos. It's just so big and unwieldy that even what the 23 counts that he was charged with does not even begin to encompass the world of allegations against him, truly.
Amy, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you were the producer of Deep Cover, which followed the story of George Santos for an entire season. And I'm curious, before George Santos ran for Congress, who was he in actuality without the lies?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that story is still coming to light. I think a lot of the narrative that's out there is the story that George created around himself. But really, he grew up in Queens. He, according to his own story, which appears to be true, he grew up quite poor. His mom was a huge part of his life, one of his best friends. But he did not go to fancy schools, as he claimed. He did
Poorest not. Man, right?
No Baruch, no NYU.
Baruch.
And no Citigroup, no Goldman Sachs. You know, a lot of that was just stories he told. But when reporters looked under the hood, notably the New York Times and also another journalist, Mark Giussano, that I've spoken with extensively, his stories just didn't hold up.
When did he begin lying?
I think you'd have to ask George Santos that question. Certainly around the time of his first campaign, he first ran for office in 2020. And that's when you start to see the narrative that he presented out there start to take shape. He really doubled down, I think, the second time around. And that's when you see stories of him, you know, working on Wall Street and just this real rags to riches kind of put himself out there as the embodiment of the American dream.
And how did these lies end up getting exposed? You mentioned the New York Times. How did they break that story?
Yeah. So in December of 2022, this was sort of in the middle of... In December of 2022, George
Before
Santos
had already been elected. Right.
Yes. So there had been an entire campaign where George Santos had told many stories about himself. And there had been a little bit of pickup. Actually, if you look back, there were some smaller outlets on Long Island that had started to raise questions, but the alarm bells really started to get louder at the end of 2022 into early 2023. That's when the New York Times had their huge story, basically saying this guy's resume is largely fiction. And from there, more and more reporters picked up on that thread. I spoke with Kadia Goba, who's a political reporter at Semaphore. And she's on the phone with George Santos at the end of December asking him, where'd you get all this money from that he's claiming to have in these campaign finance? Because publicly, he was really portraying this narrative that he was wealthy and he had been this successful businessman and he was investing in his own campaign. His campaign finance filings showed him for the 2022 campaign donating upwards of $700,000 to his own campaign, which when you look back at the campaign finance filings from just 2 years prior, he claimed assets and income of only $55,000 at that time. So it kind of on paper, it didn't seem possible that this man could have amassed that much money in such a short time and then come to find out that many of those, this is what prosecutors alleged against him, many of those loans that he listed in his campaign finance returns just didn't happen, didn't exist, or didn't happen at the time that he said that they did.
And so it was the financial crimes that got him in trouble, not the Horace Mann 9/11 job lies.
No, that's something that I have to set straight with people a lot of times when I'm talking to them about this story that, you know, George Santos told a lot of lies, but freedom of speech, for now, is still a thing in this country, and he could say what he wanted on the campaign trail, and reporters, you know, did their best to hold him accountable to those lies. But what actually ends up, how George Santos ends up being indicted on 23 different counts is mostly due to financial crimes, misrepresentations on his filings, wire fraud charges, misuse of donors' credit card information. These were all things that were laid out in the superseding indictment from the government. But unfortunately, we never got to see that go to trial.
Obviously, he's been commuted. He's out of jail. But at that time, in December of 2022, January 2023, when all this stuff is coming out, he's pretty universally condemned, right? On both sides of the aisle. Republicans, too, don't want him in Congress.
I would say that local Republicans, New York Republicans, came out very strongly against George Santos. They had actually held a press conference, issued some pretty strong statements. I think actually an interesting thing about that moment in time is that there were some Republicans who felt that having a majority was maybe more valuable than having someone in that seat that they trusted and who was telling the truth. And so you saw a little bit of some political maneuvering around that time of people saying, I don't know, maybe this guy's not so bad.
And so how did he end up behind bars? The DOJ brought these charges and he pleaded guilty?
It was a massive effort. I mean, I remember being there on the day that George Santos pled guilty. He was facing what was expected to be a weeks, if not months, long trial. I think the government had stated at one point that they had over 40 witnesses prepared to testify against him. At some point in between his arraignment and when this trial was scheduled to start, George Santos and his lawyers reached an agreement with prosecutors. And this was federal prosecutors, state prosecutors, local prosecutors. It was many suits speaking at these press conferences. And he decided to plead guilty to two of the charges. And then his sentencing was set for earlier this year, where he received a sentence of a little over 7 years.
And how much time did he end up spending behind bars?
So George Santos reported to prison in July, and his sentence was commuted in October, just shy of 3 months.
When George Santos was in prison and right before he went to prison, what was he doing to try to get out of prison? Was he making pleas indirectly or directly to Trump?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot on the record about this. George Santos has been campaigning for a plea or a commutation from President Trump for quite some time. This is something that we actually just talked about on our show, Deep Cover. Mark Chisano, who's a journalist who's covered George Santos possibly more than anyone else, he wrote a book called The Fabulist. And he really was the first person who brought this to my attention, even when we were working on the original story, that George Santos has remained a steadfast supporter of President Trump, even when there have been moments in time where others have maybe backed away or walked back their support for President Trump. Santos has never wavered. He is consistent online, on television appearances. Anytime you put a microphone in front of this guy, he is pledging allegiance to President Trump. So earlier this year, he was even, he's been a frequent guest on Piers Morgan's show. Back in May, he was on Piers Morgan's show before he reported to prison, directly appealing to the president for some sort of relief, clemency, plea, commutation, anything.
That commutation came, I think, on the Friday before this second No Kings rally. Is that a coincidence?
It's interesting, the timing. I mean, we always think about the Friday news dump. I think things that happen late in the day on a Friday are not necessarily things that people want to draw attention to. I think it's a little too early to know what the public's reaction to this is, as we're all still, you know, processing it. George Santos has only been out of prison for roughly a week, and we don't know what he's going to do next. But I'd be curious to see polling numbers on this, whether this has been viewed favorably by supporters of the president, or whether this was just maybe something done to serve as a distraction.
What was the rationale for the commutation? It seems like it was just because he was loyal to Trump, perhaps. That's why he was released.
Yeah, I talked about this with my co-host Jake Halpern on our show as well. I'm really curious. I mean, of course, no one can tell us other than the president what he was thinking about behind this decision. Certainly his loyalty, George Santos's loyalty to Trump, appears to have played a factor. The other big factor that I'm interested in knowing more about is the conditions that George Santos claims he was held in. According to his own reports and his own writings that were published in the South Shore Press, he was held in solitary confinement for long periods of time. And George Santos has claimed that the conditions that he endured while held in solitary were less than humane. So I don't know if there's going to be more to come out about that. I don't know if there are people who can corroborate George Santos's stories. I'm certainly interested in hearing more about that aspect of the case, but it seems like something that the president referenced directly when he announced the commutation. So got on the president's radar, that's for sure.
When he pled guilty, how much money did he have to pay in restitution?
Yes, this is the money question. So ultimately, George Santos was sentenced to pay more than $300,000 in restitution to largely donors. The bulk of that is to the Republican National Committee. George Santos has tried to, on CNN, he drew that distinction between, well, this is the party's money, as if that money just came out of nowhere. It's donors' money that he had been ordered to pay back by the court. When the commutation was issued, there's language in there that basically states that George Santos does not have to pay that restitution anymore. So George Santos has stated publicly that unless the law requires him, he's not going to be paying it back.
And how is he making a living now? I saw that he joined Cameo right after being released from prison.
Yes, he had been on Cameo ahead of his trial as
well.
This is not the first time we're seeing George Santos on Cameo. I do think, I mean, it's interesting. This had come up when we were working on our episode as well. I don't know that George Santos is necessarily out of politics forever. He has said that he's not going to run again for at least another 10 years, but I don't know if I buy that.
Can we take him at his word?
I don't know. Time will tell. I think he definitely, again, does not shy away from a microphone. So I think he'll probably continue doing more media appearances, maybe some advising, maybe some reality television. Who's to say?
Do you think he'll run for Congress or some other office?
I don't know. I think that's an interesting question. I can't see George Santos running again on Long Island. I just think that it was a narrow race. He lost the first time he ran, and then it was a narrow race when he won. So I can't imagine him running again there, but, you know, crazier things have happened.
Who are some of the victims? I think when we talk about this, it can kind of get lost, but I know that there was a veteran who's a victim, and there have been others. Can you bring to life their stories?
Yeah, I think, look, this is a tricky story to talk about because on paper, the biggest victim, quote unquote, that George Santos has is, in fact, the Republican Party. He really pulled the wool over their eyes and was able to amass a ton of support, financial, logistical support from the committee because he sold them a bill of goods. He told them that he had these great fundraising numbers that were inflated. You know, that's what prosecutors had laid out in their original indictment. And so a lot of these donors are not entirely sympathetic because they're donors. they're obscured by the party. They're not seen as individuals. In terms of other charges, I know the veteran that you referenced, that is a completely separate matter that, to my knowledge, has never been prosecuted and never been litigated. So in this case...
That was about a GoFundMe.
That was about a GoFundMe, and that was about George Santos allegedly offering to support this guy as his dog was dying from various illnesses. And he claims that George Santos fundraised on his behalf, but then never got him the money.
Right.
That is not what these charges are about. Interestingly, that's the thing about the story of George Santos. It's just so big and unwieldy that even what the 23 counts that he was charged with does not even begin to encompass the world of allegations against him, truly. But going back to your question of like, who are the people here? I think the victims are the people who elected him. Really, when you think about it, it's the constituents in New York's 3rd District who were given a representative in Congress, who chose a representative of Congress that is not who he claimed he was, who misused donors' credit card information, had a very short stint in Congress where he was then ousted. And then it just became a circus. And so I think when we talk about the victims in this case, it's hard to put a name or a face to it because it's actually a system that George Santos manipulated to work in his benefit.
And he has a co-conspirator still in behind bars, right?
Yeah. So Sam Mealy is a former staffer of George Santos. He was actually brought up on separate but related charges. He was sentenced to a year in prison. He also had his campaign finance treasurer, his campaign treasurer, Nancy Marks, was sentenced to 3 years of probation. She's someone who was directly involved in Santos's mishandling of his campaign finance records. And I expected to see her at trial if it did go to trial, but she sort of has not been a huge part of the story.
And Santos has said that he's going to try to free his colleague from behind bars,
yeah.
Right?
He's directly appealed for Sam Mealy to also receive some act of clemency, whether that's a pardon or a commutation. We'll see what happens there.
Could state prosecutors still go after Santos?
Yeah, so this has been the most interesting... This story just never ends. This has been the most interesting piece of new information. Ann Donnelly, who is the DA in Nassau County where George Santos ran on Long Island, issued a statement that some are interpreting as maybe that there's more to come on the Santos story. I mean, I remember Ann standing outside the courthouse and issuing a sentence on the day that George Santos pled guilty. And it was just this row of suits talking about justice being served and that George Santos had been held accountable. And now here we are such a short time later and he's out of prison. In her statement, Ann Donnelly said, "I've been at the forefront of bringing him to justice." She referenced ongoing investigations that she could not comment on. So, again, a pretty vague reference that people have latched onto, but perhaps we will see new charges brought against George Santos. Only time will tell.
How does this commutation fit into the story of the second Trump administration in terms of patterns?
Yeah. I mean, people who are paying attention have realized this is not the president's first act of clemency. In fact, for a first year in a term, it's been a very large number of pardons and commutations. The clearest example being the pardons of those associated with January 6th that happened early, early into the president's term. It was around 1,500 pardons that were granted, and then there have been a series of commutations since. So I think the narrative that is emerging is that President Trump is not afraid to dole out pardons and commutations where he sees a benefit for himself.
Where's the benefit with Santos?
It's interesting. This is a question that I asked directly to Kathy Soriff, who's a donor of Santos that I've spoken with over the years. And, she told me, "I don't understand this decision. I don't see any political benefit for George. I don't see any political benefit for President Trump to pardon George Santos." She seemed to think that the president's decision to commute the sentence was for two reasons. One, the sentence was too long. He had been sentenced to 7 years. And Kathy Soriff seemed to agree with President Trump that 7 years was too long for what George Santos had been accused of. The second was an acknowledgement of the conditions that he had been held in solitary confinement. That seems like maybe where some of this decision for President Trump and other Republicans could be stemming from.
And Santos had broadcasted that information?
George Santos had been issuing a regular column in a newspaper on Long Island from prison, dispatches about his time there. And he wrote in great detail about that. He talks about one instance where he really needed his inhaler, and it took time for people in the prison for that plea to be heard and for him to get his inhaler. He lists off other examples as well, but I think that George Santos's experience in solitary and experience being incarcerated in general and being vocal about that drew more attention from the president.
He said he's going to dedicate this next chapter of his life to prison reform. I don't think that this is the last that we'll hear from Santos. And I expect, Amy, that you will stay on this case and maybe there's more to come with Deep Cover. So thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.